I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a time trip aboard the RMS Queen Mary ocean liner, berthed in Long Beach, California since 1967. Way back in 1989, I met with the Queen Mary's historians for an exploration of the ghosts that haunt the Queen Mary. In celebration of Halloween and the 36th anniversary of the audio travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, we reshare probably the most timeless segment ever. Come along and meet the ghosts who still haunt the Queen Mary.
The luxury liner Queen Mary embarked on her maiden voyage May 27, 1936. At the time, she was the epitome of opulence and the fastest ship afloat. Every modern convenience imaginable was offered. Beauty parlors, barber shops, two indoor pools, and a fully equipped hospital. The Queen was redubbed the Grey Ghost at the outset of World War II due to her new battleship grey paint job and the utter secrecy with which she came and went across the Atlantic. As many as 16,500 troops were transported at one time. The Queen was so despised by Hitler that he offered a $250,000 prize in the Iron Cross to the U-boat commander who could sink the ship. After 1,001 crossings of the Atlantic, the Queen Mary came to rest in Long Beach Harbor. Until quite recently, the ship's management denied that the ship is haunted. Now, however, representatives are authorized to speak of the Queen Mary's spectral guests and their shipboard activities. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Please join public relations specialist Jennifer Nestegard and the historian and archivist of the Queen Mary, Bill Winberg, as we walk through the bowels of the ship in pursuit of ghosts.
Hi, Tom. Well, yes, we do have ghosts, and ever since the Queen Mary came into port in 1967, there have been several reports of many sightings on board the ship. Right now we're in the hotel section, which is actually where the first class rooms were on board the ship, and there have been several accounts here as well. One took place in one of the suites. One of our tour guides was in early one day, thought she'd take a picture of one of the suites that was one of her favorites. She really liked the decor. And she came in early and she took some pictures, and after they were developed, it was found in the picture that in the mirror was a reflection of a gentleman putting on a tie, and kind of in a 1930s or 40s attire, and that was quite scary, and that was one of the sightings in the hotel area. Another one took place also in the hotel section. It's where the Queen's Salon is, just above us, one deck. And in the Queen's Salon, another tour guide was giving a tour. And she was describing all the wood and the paneling and so forth of the salon. And there's a little girl in the group. And at the end of the tour guide's description, the little girl went up to the tour guide and said, "Well, what about that lady? You didn't mention the lady." And the tour guide said, "Well, what lady? There's no lady over there on the stage." She says, "Yes, there is." And she went on to describe a woman in a white ball gown. That was an earlier period type of dress, too, that the girl probably would have no knowledge of, but very clearly made a description of a woman dancing in the room, and no one else saw it. So that was another incident that kind of gives you the chills a little bit. So those are two incidents just right here in the hotel area.
Were there any ghost sightings when the Queen Mary was actively sailing, or all the ghosts have appeared to haunt the ship after it's been berthed in Long Beach?
Well, that's what's so mysterious, is we don't have any recordings of any sightings prior to its 67 arrival. The sightings began while it was docked over for refurbishment in a dock adjacent to us here, and a security guard was with a dog and going around watching the area where the ship was lying there vacant one night, and the dog started barking near door number 13 in the engine room, and we'll go down there later and I'll tell you the story about door number 13. But that's when the stories all started, and they've been from 67 to present day, and we get them even last week or the week before, so they're all recent stories pretty much.
All right, well, let's What, do you want to go down to the swimming pool?
Yeah, let's go down there. We're now in the first class pool. As you can see by looking around, there's tons of tile, and tile is all around us, and it's a kind of a cream and aqua. And the ceiling here was originally mother of pearl, but during the war, this area that we're standing in was used to house soldiers, and bunks were put in here for them to sleep in the pool. Actually, the pool was drained, and soldiers came here, and some were stacked all the way up to the ceiling, and so they chipped off the mother of pearl. So what you see is an imitation mother of pearl ceiling right now. The furniture is very Art Deco and is original, and I don't know about you, but you kind of feel a sense of mystery, and it's cool in here, and it kind of gives you a little feeling of the supernatural. At least that's what many people tell me.
I've got the shivers right now.
The pool is drained right now, but it used to contain a lot of water in it. And there's several stories that center here at the pool. One was involved a tour guide, again, and a tour guide was standing here, and there used to be a position here where the tour guide would stand here and tours would come in and she'd describe the pool. And she was standing here one day waiting for the next tour to come in, and she looked over to her right and she saw a woman standing at the edge of the pool in an old-fashioned bathing suit. What was really amazing was that, you know, she thought about it and she thought it looked rather strange. So she looked up to the wall, to the phone, to call security or someone to escort this poor lost guest off the property or to wherever she belonged. And then as she turned back, the image was gone. The woman was gone. She quickly ran down the stairs and looked around the corner, and there was no one to be found. She never heard a door close, so there was really no way for her to get out. Another interesting thing about that story is that later, when thinking about it, the image was in black and white. She didn't think about that right away, but later, as recalling the incident to someone else, she was reminded of that. Another story involving the pool actually had to do with two people seeing the same thing, and that's very unique when you talk about ghost sightings. We had two tour guides in here in the evening, and they were going through again doing a sweep, trying to make sure all the guests were out. And the water in the pool was rather high at that time inside the pool. And they looked and they saw the water moving just a little bit. And just then, as they watched the water, they looked at the side of the pool and they actually saw footprints. 3 or 4 footprints go to the back where there are dressing rooms. And they both looked and they didn't say anything to each other and exited from the pool. Later I asked them, I said, well, what did you say to each other? And they just didn't say anything for the longest time. And finally one turned to the other and said, well, we've heard stories about it, so I guess it's really true. So that was another story involving the pool.
We'll hear noises of people splashing and playing around in the pool and come in to find no one in here and the water completely still. We also have had security come in here, for example, and see a lady dressed in a 1930s swimming suit, poised and ready to jump into the pool. And the strange thing about this image is that it's in black and white. I've been told by some of the psychics who are on board that that's often the case when spirits like this are sighted. They're in a black and white image. Like many of the other figures that are seen on board the ship, they're seen for just an instant, and then you look away or something comes in your field of vision, and they're gone. So that's what happened with this lady. Probably the most famous story in the pool is about the lady in the green turtleneck sweater. This was back a few years ago when the tour came through this area. And the lady came through a door on the lower level, up the stairs, and there was a tour guide in here to give the normal presentation about the history of the pool. And as he saw her come up the stairway, he went around the backside of one of the pillars in the room here. And just, again, in that instant, she was gone. There was no way for her to back up or to go past him or escape anywhere. Just in that split second, she was gone.
We're in the forward hold, and no one's allowed down here. This is where all the furniture is stored, original furniture, original trunks, as you can see. A lot of it's gated up because we don't want anyone to get into this area. A lot of the furniture and everything was brought here when the ship came into port. And what we do is we really actually refurbish a lot of the furniture and put it back up on display or in one of the hotel rooms. But until we use it, this is where it's stored. As you've already mentioned, it's a very creepy area, and you can imagine what it would be like late at night. Very scary. There are a lot of stories concerning this area, naturally. As you look more forward to the ship, it's gated, and there are sensory meters up in the front to detect any kind of motion. Well, quite often during the night, the alarms will go off in our security office, and our security guards will come out here looking for maybe a cat that somehow got in or something like that, and there'll be absolutely nothing. But they will hear the sound of children's laughter, and that's happened on several different accounts from different security guards, as if there are children playing behind some of the furniture or something like that, and they'll search thoroughly, but they will find nothing.
We're down in the bowels of the Queen Mary again, and this is real quite different than topside, huh, Bill? Where are we?
Right now we're in what's called the forepeak, and this is the very front of the ship. You can see how the hull is narrowed down here to just a few feet, and right up forward here is the actual bow of the ship. This was one of the bosun's lockers. The bosun on board the Queen Mary was the person who maintained the maintenance of the ship, basically, to keep the mooring lines, keep the ship shape. So this was a storage area for him. It wasn't really useful for anything else, so that's where his storage area was located.
It's dark. It's scary. Now, there's a story about the bow of the Queen Mary that's quite fascinating. Could you fill us in on that?
Right. The only major accident to happen to the Queen Mary during her career was during World War II. Normally, at that time, she was used as a troop transport and went by herself. She went in a convoy. Of course, you would have to slow down to meet the speed of the other ships. Since the Queen Mary was the fastest ship on the North Atlantic, traveling at about 33, 35 miles an hour, she went on her own in a zigzag pattern to avoid submarines and torpedoes. Now, normally when she neared a port of call, of course the submarines would be waiting for her there. So she picked up an escort, in this case off Gourock, Scotland. The escort consisted of a British light cruiser, the HMS Curacoa, and several destroyers placed a few miles away from the ship. The Curacoa was a World War I cruiser, and so quite a bit slower than the Queen Mary. So she kept on a straight course while the Queen Mary maintained her zigzag. And upon overtaking the Curacoa, they zigged when they should have zagged. The Queen Mary hit the cruiser and cut it in half. And both halves sunk very quickly, within 5 minutes, and about 300 of the 400 men on board were lost. And the terrible part about this story is that the Queen Mary had about 10,000 troops on board at that time and was ordered not to stop for any reason. So they had to wait until the escorts could come in and pick up survivors. Now, the stories up in this area consist of when the ship was under conversion in Long Beach between 1967 and 71. Of course, every area of the ship was looked over and modified so she could become the tourist attraction that you see today. Well, one of the people was up in this area late in the evening and heard the sound of water rushing in and of men screaming. And he thought there was a leak somewhere up here. So he came to investigate and found nothing at all. And it wasn't until several years later that he actually heard of this story of the Queen Mary and the Curacoa. We've made our way, starting to go underwater. This is the aft engine room, one of two that were originally found on board the Queen Mary. Inside this room, there are two 40,000 horsepower steam turbine engines. And it took four of those engines to propel the Queen Mary across the Atlantic in about 4.5 days at a speed of 28.5 knots, about 33 miles per hour.
How many crew members were down here?
Normally there were five crew members down here, most of them stationed at the starting platform, which is just in front of us. This is where all the orders would come down from the wheelhouse, where they would adjust the speed of the engines down here and circulate the different engineers and greasers and so forth who would go around and maintain the engines.
And temperature, I imagine it was fairly warm and noisy?
It was warm. This being a steam turbine ship, it was very noisy. Temperature would be about 95 degrees in here. It was better than the boiler rooms, however. Up there it was about 110.
Now in my pursuit of ghosts on the Queen Mary, I hear rumors that there's a very famous ghost that lives nearby. Can we go see?
We sure can. We have to go further underwater to the very bottom of the ship to find him.
Well, let's go.
Okay. This is an area called Shaft Alley. This is where the propeller shafts come through from the engine room out to the propeller. And this is an area where we have one of our most famous ghost stories. This is about a gentleman by the name of John Petter. And he was an 18-year-old refrigerating engineer on board the ship in 1966. He was traveling through this passageway during one of the watertight door drills. The doors were remotely controlled up on the bridge. And so they were closing the doors, and evidently he was trying to get through quickly or got caught up somehow, and the door closed on him and crushed him to death. It's the door right behind us here, which just happens to be watertight door number 13. When I was a tour guide, when I first started here, that's the one story that I really didn't want to tell because it was so unbelievable. And it wasn't until I got into the archives and saw the paperwork on it that I saw that actually it did happen. But we've had quite a few people come through this area and see a person tinkering on the original catwalks with some of the equipment. They're dressed in blue coveralls that the crew members used to wear, and they'll come up above and ask who that was, and we don't have any crew members who wear blue coveralls, so we know it's John. There's also another story by one of our crew members here, in that John supposedly followed him up the escalator that's right behind us. It takes the guests back up again. And they were making a late night sweep through this area to make sure everybody was gone, and saw this person again in the blue coveralls and with a beard. And they followed them up the escalator, thinking it was just one of the tour guests. They waited for them to come to the top of the escalator, and they never arrived. There was nowhere for the person to go, either up or down. And when our crew member turned around, this figure was just gone.
A couple years ago, a tour guide was going to the area, and she saw a man that looked just like that coming up the escalator behind her. She had no idea what he looked like, but when we researched it and found the man who was crushed, his picture, and matched it to her description, it matched. And so there are a few eerie things like that that happen.
So John still comes down here, evidently, and tries to do his work.
I have talked to a couple employees that basically refuse to come through here after hours.
It's kind of a spooky area, even during the day. You're underwater, so you hear little noises of machinery, and maybe you'll hear water running right now. You're way down below in the ship at the bottom, so it's kind of a spooky area.
London lodges light. The ghost of Anne Boleyn walks, they declare, just in case the headsman wants to give her an encore. She has a red dot underneath her arm.
The Haunting of the Queen Mary was produced at the KCBX studios by Guy Rothbun and Tom Wilmer. Music was provided by Brass Tacks performing Over the Rainbow and the Stowaways performing Anne Boleyn. Special effects provided by Disneyland Records. Representing the Queen Mary were Assistant Manager of Publicity and Public Relations Jennifer Nestegard and Historian and Archivist for the Queen Mary and Spruce Goose Bill Winberg.
Sometimes old King Henry gives us bread.
Gives us bread.
For all his gals and pals are ghostly crew. And carves a joint and cuts the bread.
Cuts the bread.
Then in walks Anne Boleyn to queer the dew. tails are red up with a wild war whoop. King Henry cries, don't drop it in the soup. Quit the red socks.
Underneath an arm, he walks the bloody tower. With a red socks underneath her arm, at the midnight hour.
Once she caught King Henry, he was in the canteen bar. So see, are you and Seymour bar? How the sweet centurion should I know who you are?
With your red socks underneath.
Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
And see them spend their lives to bid for none of it.